Welcome to the podcast of Fairmount Presbyterian Church in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, where we feature our worship sermons. Listen again to past sermons from home, when you are traveling, or wherever you are. Listen in if you need a moment of reflection, inspiration, and love.
All summer, we have been talking about this theme I've been meaning to ask, and engaging with a series of certain questions alongside biblical texts and with one another. Some of those questions have been, where are you from? Where does it hurt? What do you need? And now, where do we go from here? Typically, I've used these titles as my sermon titles also, but this time I'd like to rename it. I'd rather this title be, "It's Okay Not to Be Okay." Several weeks ago, a few members of our church staff met with a communication expert who will help us to do church in a rapidly changing digital world. She asked us to describe Fairmount, and we spoke of real people who want to address real problems. We talked about our commitment to authentic community, to sharing real life, and to showing up vulnerably and wholeheartedly. We affirmed the importance of welcoming everyone as beloved children of God to join our family of faith as full participants, regardless of age, race or ethnicity, national origin, gender, marital status, sexual orientation, mental or physical ability, economic status, differences of thought and expression, or any other human condition. We discussed our desire to connect with people in all walks of life who need more Jesus and who want to learn more about God and ourselves. We lamented the cultural value amongst many in America to have it all together and to rely more on ourselves than our community and our God. And we wondered together how to present our church as a place of welcome to those who don't have it all together. At the end of the conversation, someone mentioned a t-shirt they had seen with the slogan, "It's okay not to be okay." This motivational t-shirt supports the idea that sometimes things happen that are upsetting, and it's okay to take the time you need to deal with it. It's a visual reminder that mental health matters, and that no matter how hard we try, we will all make mistakes. We will have bad days, bad months, and bad years, and that it's okay not to know everything. It's okay to do what's right for you, to be yourself, and to say no. It sounds simple, right? Except sometimes it's so hard to live out. The temptation is oh so strong to hide our wounds and our weaknesses and to avert our eyes from the pain of others. So today we ask a question that I hope will rest with us for some time to come as we learn to love the questions. This final question this week and next week is not the end of the journey, but creates openness to explore together what is next. It is a question of transformation. Where do we go from here? Meaning, how do we continue to cultivate curiosity, to ask questions, to have difficult conversations, and to seek connection to humanize and care for one another? What does it look like for us to step into a new beginning together, acknowledging the scars and the wounds we all carry? The truth is, we have all experienced a lot of death, grief, and loss lately. Not only during a global pandemic, but through racial brokenness, economic disparity, societal violence, and political division. Some have added to all this the death of loved ones or a critical medical condition. We need to keep engaging the difficult questions because there is no way around all of this. The only way is through it. It can be awkward sometimes, but the more we acknowledge our own brokenness and need for God and one another, the more divine help that will arrive through ordinary human relationships as we continue to discern how to care for each other and where to go from here. The story told in the Old Testament book of Ruth starts with hungry immigrants escaping famine in Bethlehem, a name which ironically means house of bread. The little family of four, Naomi with her husband and two sons, sojourns to a most unlikely place, finding shelter in the land of Israel's bitter enemies, the country of Moab, east of the Dead Sea. When the Bible speaks of Moabites, especially speaks of the Moabite women as particularly dangerous, to be avoided at all costs. But when Naomi's husband dies, her two sons marry indigenous women, and these daughters-in-law become part of the family. In a world suspicious of immigrants, legal or otherwise, this begins with a story about forced immigration. Because this family does not cross into Gentile country because they are religious radicals, they go because there is no bread in the house of bread. 10 years later, no longer sojourners, but virtually expats, Naomi's two sons also die, and we are left with a completely devastated family. They've just experienced what most first-generation forced migrants encounter in times of fight and flight: suffering, loss, hardship, and pain in a new context, the very thing they were trying to escape. Where do they go from here? It seems only one course of action is reasonable, and that is to return to the house of bread. And so the reverse migration back to Bethlehem begins. And in this text, it is clear Naomi is not okay. She names herself bitter, and she declares that the hand of the Lord is against her. In these verses, you can almost hear the women trying to figure out how to care for each other. 3 times, Naomi urges her daughters-in-law to go back, to return to their family of origin. And after much persuasion and words of blessing and the baptism of 3 women's tears, Orpah goes back to her home country. But Ruth steadfastly accompanies her mother-in-law, Naomi. Ruth listens to Naomi's words, and then she listens beyond her words to what she really needs. Leaving Moab, Ruth would face not only the barrier of cultural difference, but constant reminder she is not one of us. And knowing something of that kind of marginalization and bitterness and rumors and judgment and murmurs that may await her, the two widows make their way to Judah, and in time and with effort, they create this new covenant with each other. The wider group of women in the community also plays an important role in this story, because when Naomi comes back, they don't even recognize her, so changed is she by sorrow. You've seen the sorrow on people's faces when they've gone through something and how their whole countenance changes. But by the end of the book, after Ruth has married Boaz and they have a child, these same women pour on blessing. They tell Naomi that her daughter-in-law is worth more than 7 sons. High praise in a culture that values men and sons over women and daughters. And then in this most unusual detail in chapter 4, at the end, we read that it's not the family, but the neighborhood women who give this baby a name. Obed, meaning one who serves God. Obed will become Jesse's father and King David's grandfather, and Ruth's name will be listed in the genealogy of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew. Even in the lives of ordinary children, the blessing of the community is sacred work. My own neighborhood has a tradition: when a child graduates high school, all the mothers of the neighborhood take a photo with him or her at the grad party, or just on the porch, as it's been lately. Then we write on the back, "As you go on to the next stage of your life, know that the families of this neighborhood love you and support you, no matter what." And we all sign our names. In the past 12 years, we have sent off 12 young people from the neighborhood this way, a list that now includes current students, a teacher, a therapist, a DJ, a law school hopeful, a swimmer, a Marine, a recovering addict, a young mother, and a rookie NFL player for the Miami Dolphins. Each one faces their own challenges, and there are times that they are not okay, and we usually know about that too. And we pray for them and hold their pain and support their families in whatever turns out to be the next right thing. I thought about my neighborhood's children when I heard the news of Simone Biles' struggle and her brave decision to step out of the limelight of Olympic competition. I know she expressed mental health challenges that went well beyond gymnastics, with roots in the overwhelming pressure to perform and in the stress of the pandemic year. Not only is she the greatest gymnast of all time, but she is a sexual assault survivor of crimes committed by her teen doctor. She also carries the heavy burden, especially as a Black woman in a sport dominated by whites and speaking up as she has against racism. She is faced with impossible expectations, yet she was strong enough to be vulnerable and take care of herself. In one interview explaining her decision to withdraw from competition in order to protect her mental and physical health, she said, "Today it's like, you know what? No." You know what? No. It was an act of resistance and courage, standing up for her own well-being, defining herself, saying, "Enough is enough. It's okay not to be okay." I hope she has a family and a neighborhood to go home to when this is all over, that she can be wrapped in love and receive affirmation as she contemplates the uncertainty of where to go from here. No matter how great or small we are in the eyes of the world, we all need help in navigating uncertainty and living the questions, even when the answers are so unclear. In a 1903 letter to his somewhat anxious and uncertain 19-year-old protege, Rainer Maria Rilke makes a beautiful case for the importance of living the questions, embracing uncertainty, and allowing for intuition. He writes to him, "I want to beg you as much as I can, dear sir, to be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers, which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. And perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer." All the important questions we have raised this summer are in the story of Ruth. Where are you from? From Bethlehem and from Moab. Where does it hurt? "Everywhere," says Naomi. "Might as well change my name to Mara. Bitter." "What do you need?" Naomi says she wants to be alone, but Ruth stays anyway. "Where do we go from here? Bethlehem is no longer a food desert," so they go back, arriving at the beginning of the barley harvest, symbolizing a new beginning. None of this they do alone. The community around them blesses them along the way. In their time, in our own, living through crises is scary. Things are falling apart. The future is unknowable. So much doesn't make sense, and it's okay not to be okay. Because that uncertainty is the doorway into mystery, the doorway into surrender, and the path to God that Jesus called faith. We can trust the leading of the Holy Spirit to guide us through mutual care and love of God, neighbors, and creation. So where do we go from here? Let's live in the questions, listening for the answers, caring for one another when we're not okay, and taking steps to combat the evil forces of racism and bigotry and violence, trusting God to lead us in community until justice rolls down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream.
movement.
We thank you for listening to a worship episode from Fairmount Presbyterian Church. Revisit this podcast site weekly for new worship episodes. Have a beautiful and blessed day.